Next case is 16-8118, United States versus Driscoll. Ms. Esser, you may proceed.
Good morning, and may it please the court. My name is Meredith Esser, and I'll be arguing this case on behalf of Wade Chance Driscoll. Since the filing of the briefs in this case, a lot has changed in terms of the legal landscape that we're dealing with. I submitted a 28J letter with this court's decision in Snyder that I think really narrows the issues, and so I'd like to start with that decision today. Snyder establishes that Mr. Driscoll's claim is timely, so I don't plan to address that issue. Snyder also establishes that there's no procedural default issue here, so I don't plan to address that issue either. So what's left, I think, here is what the standard is for determining whether there was Johnson error in this case. Snyder lays out a test. Under Snyder,
does it close the door on the Wyoming burglary statute for us as well?
Your Honor, I don't think that it does, but I think that the Nebraska statute is so much clearer and so much more definitive in this case, and really this court only needs to reach the Nebraska burglary in order to resolve the case in favor of Mr. Driscoll. The test in Snyder is that this court looks to the record in light of the background legal environment at the time to figure out whether the sentencing court would have relied on the residual clause at the time of sentencing. And I think that in terms of the Nebraska burglary, it's clear that the sentencing court would have had to rely on the residual clause. There just isn't enough information in the charging document to say that this was an enumerated burglary. And the way that this court has applied Snyder in subsequent unpublished decisions is that if the sentencing court could have relied on the enumerated clause at the time of sentencing, this court essentially presumes that it did. But in this case, the Nebraska burglary conviction is just so unclear as to what exactly was charged that I don't think even at the time of sentencing, the sentencing court could have relied on the enumerated clause.
What could the court have looked at the time of sentencing? What was the case law existent then?
So I have not seen any published cases construing the Nebraska burglary conviction, the Nebraska burglary statute.
I mean, how do we determine whether this particular burglary charge is generic?
Well, the case law at the time was Taylor, and under Taylor, you know, this court quoted Taylor and Snyder saying, yes, the categorical approach can allow a sentencing court to go beyond the mere fact of conviction to look to the charging documents in the case. But in this case, the Nebraska statute charges, or the wording of the Nebraska statute is that a person commits burglary if they forcibly break and enter a real estate or any improvements erected thereon. So the wording of the statute in this case doesn't even use the language of Taylor, doesn't use the words burglary or other structure.
So you would stop right there. You'd look at the statute and you'd say the statute, the Nebraska burglary statute, is broader than generic burglary.
Yes.
And that's it. We don't look at the documents underlying the charge.
I think that under Taylor, you could look at the documents, but in this case, the documents don't really say anything one way or the other. So even if under Taylor one could use the categorical approach to go to the documents are just as overbroad and unclear as the statute itself.
Could we construe the Nebraska statute to be divisible with really two causes of action, one for burglary, breaking and entering real estate, or breaking and entering improvements?
I think that under Taylor, so using the law at the time, this court could construe it as being divisible under Taylor, but I don't think that it, again, I don't think that that really informs the analysis, because the charging document itself just says that Mr. Driscoll was charged with entering and breaking, or breaking and entering onto the Stockman Land Corporation, which it doesn't say that this was a building. It could have been unimproved land. It could have been a field. It could have been that he had broken through a gate onto an open field. There's just nothing in the actual charging document to indicate one way or the other what exactly was the object of the burglary. And I think in this case, the district...
So your bottom line is that it doesn't matter whether it's divisible or indivisible, because there's not enough underlying documentary evidence to demonstrate what the actual burglary was.
Correct. And I think that what that means for this case is that even at the time of sentencing, applying Taylor, which was the background legal environment, the only conclusion is that the sentencing court had to rely on the residual clause because it just did not have enough information in front of it to rely on the enumerated clause. And turning to the district, not the sentencing court, but the district court's opinion in this case, I think the district court, even though it didn't have the benefit of Taylor, it did do a kind of Taylor analysis. It says, given the state of the law, this is page 9 of the attachment to the opening brief, the district court says, even given the state of the law at the time of Driscoll sentencing, it was appropriate for the district court to go, this is quoting Taylor, go beyond the mere fact of conviction to determine whether he was charged and convicted only with burglary of a building or other structure. But then the district court goes on to quote the charging document, and it doesn't address the fact that the charging document doesn't use the words building or other structure, doesn't really indicate one way or the other exactly, again, what the object of the burglary was. So I think that even under the Snyder analysis, this Nebraska burglary charge is just, there's not enough information, and so the sentencing court would have had to use the residual clause at sentencing.
And then do we go on to harmlessness, or are we done?
I think that the harmlessness analysis would actually use the law today, but it would be a similar analysis in the sense that you have to look to whether, under today's law, the burglary conviction would qualify after Mathis, and I don't think that it would for similar reasons.
Again, you're talking about the Nebraska charge only?
The Nebraska charge, yes. If this court has no further questions, I would reserve the remainder of my time.
Thank you, counsel. Let's hear from the government. Mr. Condor?
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Jason Condor. I'm an assistant United States attorney out of Lander, Wyoming. Your Honor, in light of this court's decision in Snyder, there is very little to discuss here other than to look at the factors of the sentencing.
Well, don't forget, cert petition has been filed in Snyder. You know.
That is correct.
It's not over till it's over.
But in light of Snyder, which I'll focus on today, the only issue really is whether, looking to the sentencing record and the relevant legal background at the time, whether the residual clause was in fact used. As the district court found in this case, it was a matter of historical fact that the residual clause was not used, that Judge Skavdal said it was clear that it was not used. Here, this court, and there's three decisions all coming out of Wyoming, there's Snyder, Safford, Westover, and then a follow-along is Buck. And all of those cases stand for the same proposition. And they say the sentencing court's mere option of using the residual clause doesn't make it the residual clause. So Judge Timkovich, as to your point on Snyder and Wyoming, I would argue that Mr. Driscoll, who was sentenced 2 months before Mr. Snyder, that the same exact line Snyder court would apply, that it's beyond dispute that applying Taylor it would have applied. Also in 1992, there was the Barney decision from this court, a little bit different burglary statute, but it had the same exact problem, burglaries, it was overbroad. And this court said, not a problem, we'll use the modified categorical approach.
Well, how could this Nebraska burglary conviction have qualified as an enumerated offense?
How could it have?
Right.
In 2005, it would have qualified under Taylor, the same exact way as many statutes would have.
Well, as I understand it, it covers burgling real estate or improvements erected thereon. Doesn't the term real estate include unimproved land?
I would argue that it does not.
Well, how Okay, so let's say that you're right, that real estate only covers improvements, buildings. So let's interpose building, and it says so it would cover buildings or buildings. Buildings or improvements erected on a building. So you're saying that that's what your interpretation of the Nebraska statute is?
No, I wouldn't take it that. I would say that it's buildings or structures thereon. I think it may run into a curtilage problem, but I would say that it's real estate as to oppose it from personal property, but it's land with something on it, whether that's a house with a barn or a house with a shed or an office space.
What about a lot with a fence around it?
I would argue that does not apply. Now, I recognize that Judge Battalion out of the U.S. District of Nebraska in 2014 said exactly what you're saying. Look, real estate means unimproved vacant land. But the key thing from Judge Battalion in 2014 is he went through it and he said, look, it's overbroad. It covers too much. It won't fit perfectly under Taylor as a categorically generic burglary. But he did say two important things. One, that it can be made generic by use of the modified categorical approach. Number one, he said that. Number two, it doesn't qualify under the residual clause. That takes us back to 2005. When the court here was faced with sentencing Mr. Driscoll, there was nothing. The defendant did not object. So using Snyder, we looked what the law was at the time of sentencing. And in 2005, Taylor was the law of the land. For 15 years, that had been clear twofold. One, the generic burglary, the unlawful entry into the property or building or structure with the intent to commit a crime. And then the critical part is the use of the modified categorical approach.
So using the modified categorical approach or using the analytical framework under Snyder, what is it in the charging documents or the Shepherd documents with regard to the Nebraska conviction lead you to say that this Nebraska conviction was based on burgling a building as opposed to an unapproved property?
Your Honor, I think the first thing would be, and the the pre-sentence report, which was not objected to, said the defendant forcibly entered the Stockman Land Corporation in North Platte, Nebraska, with the intent to steal property. Now, agreed, that could be anything. But the problem was it was unobjected to.
So, well, he also wasn't convicted based on what a probation officer said. Nope. Do we have the district judge adopting the PSI?
He does, Your Honor, in the sense that...
In the Shepherd documents in our case, do we have a finding by the district judge adopting that PSI recommended finding?
Well, implicitly, yes, Your Honor, because there was no objection, and then the court sentenced him under the Armed Career Criminal Act. And I think that brings us back to the crux of the problem. We're trying to put the cat back in the bag. Back in 2005, the first thing you look at if you go down the Armed Career Criminal Act is the elements clause, then the enumerated clause. And one of the listed enumerated offenses is burglary. So if the defendant coming before the court in 2005 lists two burglaries, Wyoming and Nebraska, there's not a mention of it from the defendant. Nobody objects. The district court is allowed to rely on those unobjected findings in the PSR.
But under Taylor, didn't the court have to determine that that burglary was a generic burglary even then?
It should have been, yes.
Yeah,
but I think
okay.
The fact that it went unobjected to, what was the district court going to do? It's probably...
Well, the district court's the district court. The court makes the determination whether or not this sentence is proper and under what provision.
And I think looking to the sentencing record, which Snyder tells us to do, the first thing is it's an unobjected to ACCA enhancement based upon two burglaries. At the time, the enumerated clause listed burglary. There was no mention anywhere of the residual clause. There was no analysis of risk of harm. So a reasonable inference...
Was there a reference to the enumerated offense clause?
No.
Okay.
I would argue this is akin to the Norman Rockwell's Thanksgiving picture when Ma and Pa come into the family dining room and they've got a golden brown bird on the platter. I think it's reasonable under the circumstances and knowing Norman Rockwell that that bird is a turkey, not a peacock. And in this case, is what we have is the record shows the enumerated offense clause includes burglary, that there was no mention of the residual clause. Even Judge Battalion, in Richards, talking about the residual clause said it doesn't apply because it wouldn't apply. It's a bigger stretch in this case to argue that the Nebraska burglary statute would qualify under the residual clause than the enumerated clause. And that's because looking at post cases of the Supreme Court's decision in James, where's the risk of harm? If you're just breaking into a vacant lot, if you cut the fence and go into a vacant lot, where's the risk of harm?
Well, what about a trailer, for example, that's occupied by a family?
That would count as an occupied structure. That wouldn't be vacant land. And this court.
Okay, so under the legal landscape that was applicable at the time of the Nebraska burglary conviction, you're saying that burgling an occupied trailer would have constituted, would have triggered the residual clause, right? It would have been an unreasonable risk of harm, right, to individuals.
Possibly, yes.
And that would not, we know, under Ramon Silva and Shepard, that would not constitute an enumerated offense. That would not constitute a generic burglary under today's post-Shepard case law, correct?
That is correct. But I think even then, and so you would have overlap. So, and that was the whole point of the enumerated or the residual clause. It was similar in kind and the degree of risk. So, of course, if a burglary qualified as generic, it would always qualify as under the residual clause. Otherwise, the residual clause was wrongly interpreted all those years and similar in kind. So I think the key takeaway for me in this case is that even if the district court was wrong, even if the district court should have gone on and done a generic modified categorical approach analysis, which even the Nebraska courts say that's okay, if the district court did that and he did it wrong, or even if we're here today talking about they should have or the district court should have, that doesn't automatically mean it was the residual clause. That means it was a Taylor error that should have been brought up years ago.
But can we say that the sufficient demand for certainty has been satisfied? If there is this, they use the word residual, but if there is this underlying uncertainty about what the judge relied on.
I don't think it's uncertain. I mean, there's all sorts of possibilities. So I think it depends on what is the standard and what is our degree of certainty. 110% sure? No, we'll absolutely never know. Was it possible? But it seems highly improbable that the district court, faced with two burglaries, looked down the Armed Career Criminal Act and said, aha, burglary is a burglary. Nobody's objecting. I'm just going to apply these things. We're going to move along. I don't think it's reasonable to believe that the district court would have said, nobody's objecting to this, but I think I'm going to go off on a lark, and I'm going to look at this confusing and complex residual clause and determine if there is a connection, if it's connected similar to a generic burglary, and there's a real risk of physical injury. I think
Did Taylor require that, though? I mean, basically, you're making an argument of what either plain error or invited error, and didn't the district court have an obligation to go beyond the representations in the PSI?
Not if no one objects to it, the district court's allowed to rely on it. I think this could essentially turn every sentencing on its head. If the district court can't just look at the PSR, the defendant doesn't object, we may be at sentencings for days. I mean, that's an exaggeration, but to go on and cover all these anticipated adventures in the future, I mean, this was 11 years before Johnson came out. And the United States would argue that all the court had in this case was an option of using the residual clause, which is not enough. Looking at the record and looking at the relevant legal background, the district court did not use the residual clause. It just seems, it's the Norman Rockwell, it's the turkey as opposed to a peacock.
But we don't have the picture that Norman Rockwell depicted. I mean, so that's the difficulty that I have with your analogy. Because even when you read from the charging document, I didn't hear the word building or in the charging document, even in the reference to the PSI that you quoted earlier. And then you already acknowledged that there's no reference in the sentencing to either the enumerated offense clause or the residual clause. So I'm wondering how you draw this certainty like a Norman Rockwell painting when we don't have anything in the charging document.
And I'm not saying it's certain, But it's just as certain as it was in Snyder. It's just as certain as it was in Stafford. It's just as certain as it was in Westover. None of those cases did the court come out and say, we're sentencing under the enumerated clause, not the residual clause. This court looked to the record facts. And one of the record facts was there was no objection to a PSR which listed burglaries, which is an enumerated offense, as triggering the Armed Career Criminal Act. That's what this court has relied on in those three cases. This court further relied on the fact that there's no mention, there's no analysis, there's no discussion of the residual clause.
Well, I think the key is whether at the time of sentencing the court was correct in concluding that this was a burglary which was generic under Taylor. Did the sentencing court, could the sentencing court have looked at this charge and said it is a generic burglary under the holding in Taylor at the time of sentencing?
That's difficult to answer, Your Honor. I'd say absolutely it could. First of all, the biggest problem is there's no objection. So if there's an objection, the first thing the United States Attorney's Office does, we may go get the sentencing transcripts. We may supply it. Maybe the defendant
knew. That's not what we said in Snyder. In Snyder, we looked at the relevant background legal environment, and that's Taylor.
Exactly. And this case is no different than Taylor. And looking at cases at the, so for example, United States versus Mendelin Herrera out of the Fifth Circuit, 2009, the court said the Nebraska burglary qualifies under the modified categorical approach as generic. In U.S. versus Richard, Judge Battalion in the District of Nebraska said the same thing. Real estate takes it out of the generic category, but it can be made generic by the modified categorical approach. And that's exactly what we have here. Our entire discussion here today has been on, was it a Taylor burglary?
I'm sorry to take up some of your time, but it seems to me that your reliance on the Fifth Circuit case and the like seems to be, well, these are just self-evident propositions. Now, if you could apply the, if it's divisible and under Mathis, you could apply the modified categorical approach, and you had, for example, an information that says that he broke, the defendant broke into a 3,000 square foot house that was occupied by a family, well, then that would probably constitute an enumerated offense. But if you don't have reference to what, whether it was a building or an unapproved lot, and you don't have reference to the enumerated offense clause, you don't have reference to the residual clause, I don't know how you surmise from that that this case is like the Fifth Circuit case.
I'm out of time here. May I respond
go ahead,
to that?
Go ahead and answer, please.
What's that, Your Honor?
Go ahead.
I would argue that twofold. One, in Snyder, the question was the defendant sentenced under the residual clause, not whether the court properly engaged in Taylor. Here, the record facts and the relevant legal background show that he was not sentenced under the residual clause. And even in, I believe it's either Safford or Westover following Snyder, this court quoted, allowed the district court to rely on the PSR, which simply said building. And so that could mean anything. And as all these flurry of Johnson cases have done is, I don't know what building means. Is that a generic building in light of Mathis, Descamps? The cat's out of the bag since 2005. The simple issue was, did the court probably look at it under the enumerated clause? That would make the most sense. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
I think the government is arguing that since the document says burglary, we should assume that it was a generic burglary. But I think that Taylor, which was the governing law at the time, is really clear that that is not at all what the sentencing court was supposed to do. Taylor talks in at length about how different all of the burglary statutes in this country are. They say Michigan has no offense formally labeled burglary. California defines burglary so broadly as to include shoplifting. And so the concern in Taylor is that there needs to be a uniform definition for enumerated burglary. They can't tell from the documents in front of them, so the case is remanded. And I think that, you know, the Nebraska statute, if you actually look at it and compare it to a lot of the other burglary statutes across the country, it is different. It says it says real estate or improvements erected thereon. And I think that even at the time, that means that this court, following Taylor, this burglary statute would have stuck out as being different from a lot of the other burglary statutes. It doesn't say building. It doesn't say structure. And even if the court were to go to the modified categorical approach, the record just doesn't say anything one way or the other about what the object of the burglary is.
We're here on the 2255, and the burden's on you to show that it was not the enumerated or elements clause, right?
I think that Snyder determines what the burden is. And under Snyder, if the court could have applied the enumerated clause at the time of sentencing, then this court presumes that it does. But even on this record, I don't think under Snyder that this court can assume that the enumerated clause was applied. And I think that the government makes a lot out of the fact that there were no objections filed, but there would have been no need to object if all parties were in agreement that this burglary was a residual clause burglary. I mean, just the fact that there is no objection doesn't actually determine one way or the other whether this was an enumerated burglary or a residual clause burglary. And finally, I think that the point is that the court didn't even have the option to apply the enumerated clause on this record. So if there are no further questions, thank you.
Thank you, counsel. We appreciate the concession, and the counsel are excused.